to Artery, with Robert Simpkins, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In each episode of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist, specializing in a particular cultural context, has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of authorship and relational creativity in art. In this episode, Yuna Kim, an anthropologist at Humboldt University in Berlin, speaks with artist Mrs. Lee Kyung. The conversation took place in Korean, so you will hear it in English translation. I'll now hand over to Yuna to introduce her guest.
Hi, and welcome to our conversation. To briefly introduce myself, I'm Yuna Kim, an anthropologist currently pursuing my doctoral research at the research cluster Matters of Activity at Humboldt University in Berlin. I'm focusing on the relationship between Korean sartorial heritage and contemporary technological imagination, drawing on the Korean concept 살림, which means enlivening. While conducting research on this subject, I was fortunate enough to meet Mrs. Lee Kyung. From the 1980s onward, Kyung devoted her time to activism and art, exploring a range of intangible cultural arts and initiating life culture movements. She is most known to have made Korean historical attire more in tune with the rhythms of contemporary life. Her work blends art, activism, and cultural heritage in a unique way, demonstrating how powerful relational creativity can be in shaping social narratives and building a sense of community. We are currently sitting together in Kyung's atelier in Seoul, Korea. Can you briefly introduce yourself?
저는 화가이고요. 그러면서 옷을 만들고요.
I am a painter. I also make clothes, and I link lives of people with lines of art. I am also a mother of four children.
I've come to understand that your creative endeavors in the 1980s, which you call movement making, take many diverse forms, including woodcut printing, collective drawings, clothes making, and so much more. Could you share with us the source of your inspiration? What sparks you to make creative work?
어떤 현상이 있으면 어떻게 해야 될지 고민을 하면서 답을
When there is a situation, I think about how to deal with it and find solutions. When I entered university, President Park Chung-hee of Korea was pursuing a strict authoritarian policy and ruthlessly oppressed any opposition. At that time, there was an organization called the Central Intelligence Agency, and many people, including professors and students, were tortured and killed. It was a period when prisons were filled with prisoners of conscience. In 1979, President Park Chung-hee was assassinated. We thought that democracy would begin at that time. However, a military general named Chun Doo-hwan brutally massacred the conscientious groups who were demonstrating using Gwangju as a sacrifice. On May 18, 1980, Gwangju City was completely blocked and the citizens of Gwangju were massacred. Helicopters were used. Machine guns were fired, and special forces were deployed to brutally kill people, including pregnant women and children. At that time, I was in my fourth year of university, and people who were socially and politically aware regarding systemic injustices had to flee. It was a situation where no one could speak up. People were too afraid to even read about the situation. If someone wrote such things, they would be arrested or interrogated just for possessing the writings. At that time, I made woodcut prints depicting the Gwangju massacre together with my two senior classmates. We made about 500 to 1,000 prints and put them in envelopes along with materials that spread awareness about Gwangju uprising. We sent them out as mailings throughout Seoul. That was probably the first painting one had made about the Gwangju uprising, and we made sure to destroy all evidence. We had to stay in hiding for a long time. If our activities were exposed at that time, I can't imagine what would have happened. Fortunately, we managed to get through that period, but during Chun Doo-hwan's regime, there were over 2,000 prisoners of conscience overflowing in prisons nationwide. This reality was different from the art scene in Korea, where many artists thought political situations had nothing to do with paintings, but I believed that such reality needed to be depicted in paintings to bear witness to this era. So in 1984, I started painting social issues and conducting research on Korean forms of painting. That's when I founded the art group called Durong. We held our first exhibition, and it wasn't just about paintings. During those years, we worked with people in various life situations, including factory workers. We aimed to create cultural methods that could empower laborers' rights through artwork. At that time, we formed art groups and mask dance groups for workers. The artworks exhibited them were directly influenced by the work in the field. So we had both individual works, but also a lot of printmaking works that are not owned by one person but could be easily distributed. I began making artworks to depict history, society, and stories with people through art.
It seems like collective art making was an important part in your work. As I heard about the gigantic collective painting, also known as 걸개 그림, I became curious what made people gather together to create this work. Can you tell us more about the context it was made?
그다음에 그때 공동 걸개 그림이라는 걸 했어요. 그리고 그 전체 행사는 마치
During that period, we engaged in the communal creation of Gölge paintings, an experience that mirrored the spiritual intensity of a shamanistic ritual. Our canvas became a conduit for both the living and the deceased, akin to art boards employed in traditional Korean shamanistic practices. Those were tumultuous times marked by numerous protests in response to the killings by an authoritarian government. The funeral of Lee Han-yeol saw approximately 2 million people gather, filling the space in front of the city hall to capacity, with spectators peering out from surrounding buildings to join in the solemn solidarity. In such circumstances, there was a need for a tangible representation of the collective sentiment, something that captured the magnitude of these gatherings. We started to create large-scale illustrations that portrayed these scenes, which we would then carry during protests, labor rallies, and other public demonstrations.
For instance, we commemorated Moonsong Neon, a 14-year-old boy who tragically lost his life to hypothermia while working for a thermometer company. As part of a grand street procession in his honor, we collaborated with local workers to create a Dölge painting of Moon's likeness.
We assembled in a hall given to us by a textile labor union, where we crafted the painting together. Regrettably, this piece of memorial art was later seized, damaged, and ultimately lost.
Could you delve into the details of how a Dölge painting comes to life? Who contributes to its creation, and what elements are incorporated into it? Maybe you could provide us with insights into another instance of a Dölge painting's development.
네, 우리나라에 이제 그 울산에 이제 현대 자동차, 뭐 현대 그 그룹들이 울산에 이제
The genesis of the first labor union occurred in Ulsan City, South Korea, an industrial hub that is home to Hyundai Group's operations. In our endeavor to promote consciousness and active involvement in the labor union movement, we curated cultural events and orchestrated educational activity. For these unions, due to the presence of pedestrian bridges, we faced challenges when marching with our large-scale paintings as we had to negotiate the underpasses. Consequently, I was inspired to transform the artwork into folding screen. Let's consider an instance where we had 5 workplaces. We would gather narratives from each, creating paintings that, when connected, formed a unified tapestry, yet when separated, each told the unique tale of its respective workplace. This format allowed for easy transportation during marches. The paintings could be folded into a single piece and swiftly carried under bridges. The segmented design facilitated separating and rejoining the pieces as necessary. After the rallies, each piece could be returned to its originating workplace, serving as a poignant reminder of their participation proudly displayed in the labor union offices. In anticipation of future events, these individual paintings would be assembled again to form a larger narrative.
But how did the workers actually work on the painting? Did they know how to paint?
그림 그릴 줄 모른다 그러면 그냥 얘기만 듣고서 오면은 모여서 그냥 같이 쉽게 쉽게 만화처럼.
While most participants were not formally trained in the art, they brought their unique style to the drawing board. Even those who felt clueless about drawing found their place in narrating the stories, and others translated these tales into visual. If the overarching design was robust, each person's story seamlessly integrated into the narrative, granting everyone the gratification of contributing a small part to a larger masterpiece. One such masterpiece was a collaborative effort of labour cultural groups from across the country, over 500 strong, drawn during a summer retreat at a university. Each workplace deliberated on their pressing concerns, and these narratives coalesced into one grand drawing. The central character was Issimi, a symbol of the common folk depicted as a dragon-like figure winding like the Korean mountains. As Issimi ascended the heavens, a labourer, the embodiment of their struggle, rode atop clutching a large flag. Underneath this flag fluttered the stories of various workplaces, each depicted with their individual concerns, neighbourly tales, and narratives from adjacent factories. Upon completion of this shared picture, the collective brainstormed the perfect slogan for the flag. This dialogue was saved for. When everyone was present, initiating a vibrant discussion in the courtyard where the painting was hung, the exchange was heated, passionate, and eventually led to an agreement. The final task of inscribing the slogan required a human tower with a three-person stack. The topmost individual, equipped with a bucket of paint and a large brush, would inscribe the slogan as it was chanted by the crowd. In this manner, the collective effort of all 500 participants birthed a single, complete artwork. This process, reminiscent of the Horyong Jongjong tradition of leaving one eye of a dragon unfocused until the artist completes it in a public gathering, imbued a sense of exhilaration among the participants. At the height of this enthusiasm, or Sinbaram, which means divine wind, the painting was deemed complete amid the cheering of 500 voices. This experience is beyond what any individual artist can envision, and this is the essence of girl gay painting.
Your approach to fashion seems to embody the same relational approach. How did you navigate the shift from art to the clothing movement?
그림이라는 게 선입견이 있어요. 예술로서 바라봐.
There are preconceptions about painting. You see it as art, which comes with a certain distance. But in fact, I view art as one of the innate instincts that humans possess. So eating, wearing clothes, speaking, listening to music, appreciating beauty, expressing gratitude and admiration, all of these are art. But the moment you label it as art, it creates a certain distance. This distance limits the act of artistic expression. Restricting personal expression is advantageous for those in power. They don't want individuals to express themselves freely, so they maintain control over the system. When I spent time with the factory workers and tried to make art collectively, I sensed the distance they had with expressions labelled as arts. But when I draw pictures on clothes, they would casually say, "Could you draw a little more here?" Isn't this a bit weird? They felt distance to art, but with clothes, they could say anything. I thought that was a big advantage, so I started to draw on people's clothes. This was in the 1980s when the whole country of Korea was boiling with a nationwide democratization movement. But as I mentioned earlier, people's expressions were blocked, and I saw clothing as an important form of expression. It's a moving exhibition. Imagine if 100 people wore the same clothes with the same slogan written on them. Even if they don't speak, it becomes a shout. So I started to print slogans and drawings on T-shirts, and that's how the movement of wearing our clothes started.
When you say wearing our clothes, it means what Koreans used to wear before the global clothing industry came into the Korean peninsula, right? Can you tell us more about this movement of reimagining heritage?
네, 그때 또 우리는
In the 1960s, students and intellectuals started to look into Korean culture before industrialization. There was such a desire after experiencing colonialism. This is because after colonization, autonomous cultures could not reemerge and another foreign culture came in, which people viewed as another invasion. So when rural culture began to disappear, research on agricultural culture began. This eventually led to the folk dance revival movement in the 1970s. In the process, students started wearing farmers' clothes, and while they didn't formally study the differences between Western and Korean clothing, they had an instinctive understanding. For example, if you try to perform a traditional mask dance wearing jeans or Western-style pants, the pants of 3 out of 10 people will rip. This is because these pants are not designed to lift your legs so high. Although they knew such differences existed, no one conducted systematic research. As I drew pictures on t-shirts, I realised there were limitations. So I shifted the movement to wearing our clothes, studying the structure of our clothing and our spirit. Together with fellow movement makers, we started presenting these studies, and that's when we first started using the term lifestyle culture movement. Back then, democracy movement was leaning heavily towards political struggle. People involved in political movements were violently suppressed. While the general public believed it was the right thing to do, they could only observe. The lifestyle culture movement means that one can practice at least a little. One may not be able to write a manifesto, but they can try wearing our clothes. They can try stamping one symbolic pattern on their clothing. So that's what we tried to do. This work was about spreading such activities, participating in labour movements, and also being part of the Democratization Youth Coalition.
사람이 주제고 사람이라는 것은 우주예요.
In a way, I think human is itself a universe, and these people are the subject of my creative activities. Each individual's life is influenced by various social systems, imperialistic or international orders, and these systems restrict their lives. How can we establish these systems correctly and overcome them in our daily lives? I think of it as a constant battle. How can we overcome and triumph over these challenges? That is my focus.
How would you describe the way you work with clothing?
내가 옷을 만들지만 나는 반만 만든다고 생각해요, 늘.
When I make clothes, I only contribute to half of the process. It's always about how the wearer can complete it. For example, even with pants, I create only a few sizes. Then the person wearing them can fold them to fit their own waist. As a result, even if it's the same pair of pants, the outline differs for someone with a waist measurement of 26 and someone with a waist measurement of 30. Western pants have a fixed shape, so the body has to fit into them. If it fits, it's fine. If not, it can't be worn. But with our pants, the shape changes according to the way the wearer fastens the pants. Our clothes, like bojaki, a traditional Korean wrapping cloth, have different shapes depending on how they are wrapped. Our clothes are mostly asymmetrical. The shape of the clothes varies, and even the shape of the subsequent layers differs. There is hardly anything that is symmetrical, unlike Western clothes, which often have perfect symmetry. The reason for asymmetry is to create appropriate lines when the person wearing it adjusts it according to their body shape. If it's symmetrical, you can't go beyond that. But if it's asymmetrical when you adjust it in a certain way, the appropriate shapes come out, allowing you to enjoy it your own way. When I make our clothes, I create both symmetrical and asymmetrical designs, but fundamentally, I incorporate asymmetry. It allows the wearer to change the way they tie and adjust it.
But then, when comes the completion?
Completion itself is about forming relationships, and it involves the concept of sharing. That's why I always say that when you hang those asymmetrical clothes, they look loose and strange. You have to wear them and adjust them to understand the clothes. When I make clothes, my goal is to make them beautiful for someone. But how can I decide what is beautiful without knowing who will wear it? There are billions of people on this earth. Isn't it strange that not a single person is the same? It's fascinating to me. With so many people, not a single one is the same. And if we look deeper into the phenomenon of life, just like how everyone has different faces, the internal organs are also different. The size, position, and spacing of the liver, stomach, lungs, heart, and so on are all different. To make someone beautiful, the person wearing the clothes should be able to do something to fit their own body so that they can complete it beautifully. I believe that the final goal is for the person wearing it to take on the responsibility themselves.
How about the usage of colors? Do you have a principle in how you choose them for each clothing?
나는 옷에 들어가는 색깔을 어때야 되는 그 color that goes into clothing
should make the wearer stand out. The different positions of the internal organs are classified into 5 types of constitutions in the East. Alongside, there are branches of 5 colors, and among the branches of 5 colors, there are some deviations. I classify the person's constitution and decide the color that makes that person stand out, considering there are differences for each individual. I pull out a range of colors that suits them, mixing it with some deviations.
I've seen you wearing a lot of clothes in the red range, even right now. Is that related to your constitution, as in your body type?
위장이 약한 체질이에요. 그리고 순환이 잘 안 돼요.
I have a weak stomach constitution, and my circulation is not good. People like me should wear red clothes. The wavelength of this color also helps me, and my face looks prettier. Look, my face is yellow because people with bad stomachs have yellow faces, so I don't wear pink, even though it's also red. I wear colors like orange or maroon, which are red but have a bit of yellow in them. Since my face is yellow, I basically accept red that accommodates yellow. You know, the 5 basic elements? Wood, fire, earth, metal, water. The human body can also be divided like this, the internal organs as well, and the colour of a person can be thought in this light. This is called the 5 elements colour chart, a principle of human life that has been passed down for a long time in the East. I use colour according to that principle.
Following the way you incorporate the wearer's constitution and the 5 elements color chart while leaving the wearer to participate in the completion of a garment, the wearer must develop a special relationship with the clothing. How does the relationship between you and the wearer and the material continue to develop after the clothing leaves your atelier?
1년에 한 번씩 낡은 옷 되살리기라는 행사를 했었거든요.
Every year, our clothing brand conducts an event titled Reviving Worn Out Clothes, where we encourage individuals to bring their well-worn clothing. We celebrate wear and tear as a unique form of beauty. While it may seem counterintuitive for a brand to promote mending old clothes, as one might assume this discourages new purchases and leads to financial loss, we hold a different perspective. We continuously advocate for the repair and preservation of old clothing, encouraging it hand down to future generations. The natural fibers of these garments retain their beauty even after extensive wear, just like humans who possess a distinctive charm as they age. Worn-out clothes embody a special kind of beauty. This beauty of age and wear is a central theme for us. Every November, we select around 10 individuals from applications to participate in a collaborative restoration event. Participants bring along their once-loved, now-worn-out clothing. They share the stories these clothes carry, their reasons for wanting to mend them, and everyone involved contributes their thoughts and suggestions. Take the collar, for instance. It often wears out first because it frequently contacts the body. I don't see this as damage, but rather as a transformation that the material undergoes due to human contact. If we can showcase this transformation, we can make the garment uniquely beautiful. If the collar is frayed, I would embroider over it with thick threads, creating a rich fur-like texture that often surprises and delights onlookers. We provide threads, needles, and other materials, and participants also start to embroider on their worn-out clothes. For instance, if someone's pants have burn marks, we utilize them as an opportunity to create a beautiful pattern by placing dark fabric in the center and drawing a pattern around it. The burn mark itself turns into a beautiful design. This way, we repair clothes. I find this process fascinating.
It is fascinating indeed. What is next for you? What are you excited about right now and thinking about at the moment?
나도 늙고 그러면서 이것을 이제
Now, as I get older, my concern is the importance of passing on these efforts to the next generation, especially as our society deepens further into capitalism. I worry that the dream I had and the things I've been doing are becoming less and less understandable in this society. When I pass on this responsibility, I question who can continue to navigate this difficult path. I'm afraid that my story and my cause may be too heavy a burden for whoever inherits it, so I'm thinking about the meaning of succession. In my time, I was fortunate enough to live in a social period where people aspired to change society, fueled by the will for democracy, longing for justice, anger against dictatorship and slaughter, and resistance to these conditions. We shared a common problem. What to create in response to these issues? Despite the hardship, my work had meaning because many people empathised and responded to it. As society systematises more and more into capital, I feel like I'm being sucked into inescapable holes, and I worry about how I can continue to extend the work I have done so far. This is now a new task for me. Amidst a society where everyone's consciousness is being reorganised into capital, I worry about how an individual or a group can navigate the deepening issue. And secondly, I haven't had the chance to paint as much as I would like to. Most of the paintings I've made when I absolutely had to and when there was no time were done in lieu of sleep. These works, which were created at the expense of my rest and leisure time, are now collected in the National Museum of Art and other social organisations, marking an end to that period of my work. I think about what I've missed or what I want to do in the remaining time of my life, and I want to complete more paintings. But people often think of painting as a technique. They want to learn to paint well, thinking that's what makes it cool. But painting isn't something you learn. It's something you do when you want to. Everyone has different longings, just like everyone's face is different. How can you learn someone else's longing? The act of bringing out what you have within yourself, that's painting. It doesn't have to be a cool expression visible to the eye. A doodle or anything that represents what's in your heart is a painting. That's the starting point. But people think of painting as knowledge. They think that you have to learn to paint well, so they memorise art history, compare and explain paintings. What does that have to do with their lives? It only goes as far as showing off knowledge and cultural literacy. It's meaningful in its own way, but a painting that stays at the level of culture and knowledge is only shared to a certain extent. Art culture now involves brief explanations of paintings' backgrounds by docents or looking up art history, maybe even going on art gallery tours with guided explanations. I want to see art culture in a more amateur way, in a way that touches life more essentially. Take football, for example. People in Korea love the player Son Heung-min, also known as Sonny, because he's so good at football. But football is something that everyone in the neighbourhood should be able to do, not just Sonny. Playing football makes us healthy. It's fun, and it should be something we can do in the neighbourhood. There should be a football field, balls, and a team we can join. If you broaden the base like that, there won't be just one Sonny, but dozens. But currently, there's no such foundation. It's just Sonny. He's a product of exceptional talent and extraordinary nurture by his father. What I'm saying is there shouldn't just be this. There should be neighbourhood community football. So I want to create paintings that are like local football. I've already started a project to make paintings that are akin to it. I've cleared a space in our company to use as a studio to paint. But before I started painting, I've started a drawing class for North Korean defectors. There are several reasons why I chose them. There's an organisation that's been working for over a decade to sincerely address the North Korean defector issue while maintaining a proper view of North and South relations. I'm involved in this organisation and wanted to approach the efforts from a more profound artistic perspective. When looking at it individually, how a person adapts to a particular system plays a significant role in their happiness. Living in South Korea, there are times when I consider it a blessing to exist as a human in such a land, experiencing the historical whirlwinds. In a life filled with joys and sorrows, struggling with prosecutors endlessly, I've been tempered. It's not about wanting to escape this hardship, but rather about continuously putting myself to the test. Will you still live as you wish, even while being reprimanded like this? I've been living for over 60 years, continuously being refined by this process. In a society like this, the actions I've taken and the reactions they've caused have all had impacts. So I think of these actualizations and sufferings as artistic resources for life. I consider it fortunate to have been born and to live on the Korean Peninsula, meeting and working with wonderful people who have overcome challenges and are living their lives fully. Where else could I form such human relationships? This is something I find incredibly fulfilling. These relationships beyond the monetary have created a social environment. However, when I was adapting to this society, I suffered immensely. The women from North Korea with whom I collaborate have navigated their way through two very different societal systems. The process of shifting from one societal structure to another has inflicted upon them severe distress, sometimes leading them to the extreme measure of selling themselves. These individuals bear an unbearable burden of pain, and my hope is that they could channel this through their artwork. If they can articulate their traumas effectively, it could transform into a profound artistic or life resource. However, if they struggle to articulate these pains, they could be left with severe psychological trauma. With this in mind, I aspire to assist them in converting this ordeal into a resource through the medium of art. This is the motivation behind the initiation of the project, Autobiographical Sketches by North Korean Defectors. I also have my own artistic works I want to pursue once I finish organising this process over the next 6 months. It is about people who have played essential roles in democracy movement without being spotlighted or acknowledged, unseen to all. I want to find these people and represent them through drawings. Once my current project is finished, I want to find those people and work on it. I want to work on this in the narrative forms in traditional Buddhist paintings. When I was young, I was very interested and looked into it, but I only applied those forms and drew only one piece. I lived without having much time. But now this painting has been acquired by the National Museum of Modern and Contemporary Art, Korea. I feel sorry for the curators of the museum. Because it's just one piece unless someone understands and explains it diligently, people won't know the meaning of the painting. If I had drawn about 20 of such paintings, it would appear as a form of style that people would understand just by looking at it, but I couldn't provide that. So I'm thinking about experimenting with such stylistic forms in the future.
Thank you very much for sharing such an inspiring journey. I'd also like to express my gratitude to every listener who joined us for this episode.
This was Artery with Robert Simpkins, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology, supported by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Hope to speak with you again soon.